All righty. Welcome to Mustard A&A's. I am Matt.
I'm Richard.
And we discuss things in the entertainment industry that capture our interest. These can consist of movies, new and old, DVDs, TV.
Video games.
Today we're going to be talking a lot about Apple.
Cool.
So
fresh on the heels 3 weeks ago of the...
Two weeks ago. Oh, we missed last week because there was ice betwixt your house and mine, and you didn't want to figure out how to do Skype.
I don't know. Although I'm realizing that the solution will be, since I do have two computers, it's going to be basically doing Skype through one computer and recording the conversation, and me on the other recording it, and then later stitching them together.
I can record my end too and just send you that.
We could do that too. That would be good. Yeah, that would work. So we could be on Skype, but if you're recording, you just send me the MP3 file. But anyway, we digress.
As usual. Wow, it's a little early. We're getting an early start this Sunday.
It's not even 9 a.m.
Okay. I don't know. Do you want to do like regular movie stuff first and
sure.
then do the Apple stuff?
Sure.
Or?
I saw Pan's Labyrinth this week. Have you seen it yet?
No, we were talking about seeing it yesterday, and then we didn't see it.
Well, we saw it at. It was cool because it's more indicative of the fact that Americans, at least in the urban communities, the suburbs of the urban communities are more willing to take and to watch foreign movies. Because this was a completely foreign movie. Wasn't really even mentioned that it was a foreign movie, but it was playing in the suburbs out here in Linwood in a pretty packed house. And it's a pretty stunning movie. It's a great, great movie. It's not my favorite of the year, but definitely in the top 10.
Very cool.
Yeah, it's an excellent movie. It's very... what was funny is I found it really disturbing in so many areas, and I found it funny that so many reviewers were compelled to give an age range of kids that should be appropriate to see it, because it's an R movie, but they're going, like, I think a 12-year-old, or really just a 12-year-old could or should see this, because it's effectively a fairy tale, and for some reason they're thinking, well, it's a fairy tale, we should send kids to see it, and I'm thinking, the hell? Why are you even bothering to do this? It's clearly an adult movie.
Maybe they figure it's going to happen anyway. Well, anyone that's going to... I don't know. Anyone that's dumb enough to bring their kid to an R-rated movie without having thought about it isn't going to be reading that review anyway.
Yeah.
Any review, really.
Yep.
It was
a great movie. It was also kind of cool to see a trailer in front of it. Again, out in the sticks, a classic independent foreign language trailer that didn't... Invariably, if you'll get a trailer that goes out to the sticks, that's for a foreign movie... They really try to avoid that it's foreign. So you'll see a bunch of long shots, people looking lovingly with the narrated voiceover, hopefully somehow to convince you that they're not actually speaking a different language to the whole movie. And in this one here, it's this great looking movie, this German movie that Jeff Wells and others have been raving about called The Lives of Others, where it focuses on East Germany during the Stasi era. And it looked great, but I was mostly excited to go, wow, I'm seeing this trailer in Linwood. I didn't drive all the way to RD downtown Seattle to see the trailer. I was excited about the not likelihood, but the possibility that it might make itself out to the sticks.
That's cool.
Which is cool.
Yeah, I haven't seen anything in a theater. Well, I guess Children of Men was the last. I did pick up Miami Vice at Costco.
I saw it there, but I just thought I'd wait till I saw the Blockbuster.
The unrated...
Director's version, vision.
Or he put a bit more footage in. There's a new intro, and they tweaked this song. Instead of being over the credits, they put it over the big battle. I liked it. I think I liked it a little more in the theater.
Yep.
I was a little distracted. My wife wasn't a big fan.
Really?
The dialogue, which sounded lame in the trailer, did not to her get any better in the film. Especially because... The way Colin Farrell is playing the character sort of this very intense, and he's like, some of the stuff he's saying is right on the borderline of cliche.
Yeah.
And for her, it just...
Hmm.
So that I would have liked it a little more had she been enjoying it quite as much, but... I'm watching it, and I'm thinking, why don't I own Collateral?
Collateral's great.
I saw it at Best Buy for like $9.
Yeah, Collateral is such a great movie. If I remember right, though, it doesn't have a commentary track. And Michael Mann's done some commentary tracks, but
there's one on this.
Oh, is there on that? Okay, good.
I haven't seen it. I'll definitely have to pick it up then. Special features.
I'll definitely have to pick it up.
And then, oh, we picked up Little Miss Sunshine, and
I heard there's like tons of extra stuff on that one.
Well, there's two commentaries,
alternate endings, all kinds of stuff.
There's a music video and some trailers. That seems pretty standard, actually.
Two commentary tracks, alternate endings, additional scenes. That's a lot.
No, I don't think there's any additional scenes. I think there's.
I thought there was like an alternate. Okay, well that's.
I haven't seen it yet.
That's a lot. Two commentary tracks.
It is, however, a flip disc.
Oh yeah,
flip
this
for the full screen. Flip it for the widescreen. And I haven't seen the last time I had a flip disc, I think, was my original Fifth Element DVD from 1999.
Hmm. I've got a couple. Couple flips there.
You don't expect it on a new one, though.
No.
Anyway, so I showed it to a couple of friends. They really enjoyed it. I mean, really enjoyed it. Yeah. And watching it the second time, what really struck me was how good the child actress was.
Yeah.
And how I think a lot of, I mean, it's an ensemble piece, and every single actor does an amazing job, but it wouldn't have worked at all if that child actress wasn't good, and she was. And the way that character was written to be a very realistic and believable character,
mm-hmm,
really grounded the whole thing. And it struck me that if they had screwed that up even a little bit, the rest of it wouldn't have mattered, or wouldn't have clicked near as much as it did.
Well, the whole movie, it's entirely dependent on its performances, because it is full of weird, play cute cliches that never come across that way. It's just so, it could have been so horrible. And you're right, she's the glue that holds the whole thing together. But every performance in that movie was pretty dang good.
Yeah, I agree.
And on its face, it could come across as like a really bad northern, quirky people doing quirky things. And it never, ever did that to me. And it just had the craziest situations that always felt somehow grounded in some kind of weird reality that these actors put it through. I love that movie. Can't wait to see it on DVD again.
They're promoting the heck out of Smokin' Aces.
Yeah, they sure are.
Lots of commercials for that on the shows I watch. And I'm interested in it, I have to say. I don't know if it's, you know, I like Jeremy Piven, Ben Affleck's in it, I'm sure, for about 30 seconds.
Well, it's interesting. It looks sort of like a super-duper Tarantino-esque
true
kind
romance-y.
Of thing. Yeah, and that Joe Carnahan, I mean, the movies that I've seen of, at least like Narc and some others, are just like gritty, like 1970s kind of French Connection kind of thing. So this is like completely different. It'll be interesting to see how it comes out.
We'll see. It's, you know, it's one I'm interested in now. When it actually comes out, will I have the time and desire then?
Yeah.
A couple of emails we received this, actually, mm-hmm, for the last week's show, which we didn't do. Apparently, there was a story going around that Harrison Ford turned down an offer to appear in a spin-off Han Solo movie.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, that would strike me at, what, wait, you turned it down 20 years ago?
Well, originally, that's what I thought, but I just read the email this morning. Apparently, it was to choose between that now or Indy 4.
Oh, huh. Well.
And he chose Indy 4, and
That strikes me as complete and utter baloney, because why would, I mean, what, as opposed to not do Indy when they've been invested so much into it? That just strikes me as,
I don't know,
strikes me as utter fantasy. I've never even heard that. But that said, the whole key, not Indiana Jones, but the key to Harrison Ford and Han Solo, to me, was he was young and vibrant. I don't know if I would want to see a senior citizen Han Solo.
I'd be fine with that.
I don't know.
You say young and vibrant. He was like the oldest.
But he was in his like late 20s, basically. I mean, or maybe early 30s. You're right. He was the old but incredibly young action hero. He was the action hero of those movies.
You know, it could be a crossed wires rumor about something going on with the Star Wars TV stuff they're working on.
Yeah.
And maybe there's going to be like a cameo or something like that, and somebody just, I don't know.
And I think I sent you an email. I told you that I had, just on a whim, God bless Google Video, which is so much better than YouTube in some ways, in that there's a lot of really important historical works that people have put on there on their entirety and nobody seems to have pulled down. Number one being the famous 1978 Star Wars Holiday Special.
Oh yeah.
So I watched that thing and it's as unwatchable as you can imagine. I literally could not get 10 minutes into the thing because it was horrible. That said, I don't understand why Lucas doesn't release it because it's just so goofy and of its time. But anyway, what was interesting was is they did get Han Solo and others to appear in it. I thought it was through the whole thing, but it was just literally for a minute or two. And Mark Hamill was in it, and he looked so creepy and weird in it. He had this weird hairdo, and it just looked awful. But when B. Arthur started singing, you knew this thing was not going to be good.
I've never seen any portion of it. I think I've seen a still or two of like Boba Fett.
Yeah, and there's like this weird almost anime cartoon segment like halfway through of Boba Fett. But the rest of it's all live action. It basically takes place in Chewbacca's Wookiee family while they're waiting for Chewbacca to come home for a holiday, which they never explain what it is.
There was an article, I think it was in Wired, where they're interviewing George Lucas and they asked him what was up with that holiday special. And it's like, and here George Lucas hangs his head and says, well, it's just something we did. I always thought that was the greatest response and characterization of his answer.
Well, it was funny because I don't know how much they were involved with it because it was clearly filmed on video in a studio like a soap opera studio. All the sets were like a soap opera or like a sitcom. So it's like one of those sets where everybody's facing the camera and then there's no sense that it's even remotely in somebody's house or whatever. And it was filmed like down in Burbank. And you get the feeling they just kind of went along with it. They were probably gearing up for I don't know if they were gearing up for any production of the other ones. Anyway, it was pretty bad. As I mentioned in my email, the best, absolute best part about it was to watch the ads that were in the middle of it. This was duped off a Baltimore TV station, a really high quality dupe. And you saw all the contemporaneous ads at the time. And those are always fascinating because they're all 30 seconds or longer. They're ads for like unions and ads for other stuff. And you get a better sense of the time watching those than you do the other stuff. But anyway, highly recommend it. Hopefully they won't delete it because there's a lot of cool stuff that people put on Google, which for whatever reason doesn't get pulled off like it does on YouTube. And Google's video, as long as they use a high quality encoding, it looks really good. About a month ago, I watched in its entirety an extremely famous film in certain circles called Titicut Follies, and it was this director that had gone in and filmed the residents of basically a mental institution in, I think, Massachusetts, and it was in the early or the mid 60s, and the conditions in there were so absolutely horrendous. You cannot begin to believe how bad that they treated these people that it caused a storm, and then they ended up banning it because it was exploiting supposedly these residents, which was completely not true. So for the longest time, the thing, and continues to be banned, the only way you can ever show this film is if the director shows his own copy of the film to a select audience and he has to be present because it's banned or whatever. Well, somebody got a copy of it and put it on Google so I could watch it, this movie that a lot of people have seen or that haven't seen. So it was kind of cool. Anyway, I love Google Video, and hopefully I think a lot of it is just people put them on there and don't advertise it. And if you go looking for it, you can find it, because I'm sure if the state of Massachusetts knew Titicut Follies was on there, they would probably get rid of it. Anyway. Okay.
A story that's going around and everybody's commenting on is the reluctance of Sony to assist the adult industry in using Blu-ray.
Yeah.
So the meme here is that's it. Blu-ray's dead because porno is going with HD DVD.
Yeah, it's completely wrong. Here's why it's wrong, because like they were saying, like 5 years ago, if you looked at a lot of these porn companies, like Vivid, come from DVD sales. Now it's down to about 30% because of pay-per-view, because of the internet or whatever. They're not completely dependent for making, first of all, there's not a huge clamoring for the HD DVD. There's plenty of DVD players out there that are working. And then the other ones, it's not the death knell that you would thought it would be, where porn kind of drives everything, because porn drove the DVD industry for the huge longest time. And it's totally not the case anymore.
For the huge longest time?
For the hugest, mostest longest time.
I know you
time.
Have a degree.
The mostest longest time.
Yeah, it's just interesting to see the story come out and hear the various reactions, because some people are full on, oh, that's it, it's Blu-ray's done, and I haven't heard anyone say, well, actually, if you look at porno in high definition, it doesn't look that good. That story was going around a little while ago, but I haven't heard it refreshed as part of this.
Having not seen it in high def, I don't know about that, but
nor has anyone. Talked about the using any of the new interactive features.
Yeah.
Like maybe you can see the hairy Bob and Man ass from this angle.
Yeah.
I don't know what the figures are in terms of DVD versus pay-per-view or cable or hotel revenue, but you're right, they're probably dwindling as a percentage of other things. It just seems to be like a story people enjoy telling.
Yeah.
Well, other reason that maybe they can hang their hat on this as, oh, look, we finally have a winner.
Well, I think it does portend the full industry, does offer instructional information about the full industry when you realize that distribution of movies in general is not dependent on DVDs as much as it was nowadays with digital distribution of content through video on demand, through iTunes, through Zune or whatever, through a multitude of ways. All of a sudden, high def versions of these movies, all of a sudden, it doesn't seem the end all be all in the same way it doesn't seem it with porn, with the internet. So I'm thinking ultimately, I wouldn't have thought this before, but now I'm thinking, yeah, maybe they just came out too late. Their little battle, they came out too late and people just don't care. And they may both not be hugely successful. And certainly it's the last battle. There cannot be another thing that replaces. It will entirely be digital delivery. And we'll be even laughing 10 years from now, thinking that even people even thought that a hard medium was going to be the way that any of this would go.
It sort of ties into the other storyline, which was really sort of peaked a week or 2 weeks ago, of how badly the PS3 launch has gone.
Yeah.
In almost every sense of the word.
Yep.
From the physical fact of not having enough consoles at launch and reducing their announced numbers.
Yep.
To the fact that they're actually in the stores now.
Yeah.
You can get them, and that nobody thought that was going to happen.
Yep. And yeah, I know right now, and it's like you can get them and they're actually not necessarily selling, which
the period of not being able to find one was incredibly short.
Yep.
Which I don't think anybody expected. I didn't expect it. Just the PR moves they've made have been horrendous at every step. It's like they've done the exact opposite PR thing that they should have done.
Yeah.
They're no doubt losing money on every box, a ton of money. Blu-ray is not. It seems like there was another story we talked about a while ago about how the public perception of Blu-ray is really negative because they feel forced into it.
Yeah, exactly.
Versus the optional HD DVD Microsoft model.
I'm sure you heard, though, that of all the consoles, the number one selling console at Christmas turned out to be the PlayStation 2.
Yes.
Even quietly, without any promotion, people are still buying the damn thing in droves.
Well, it's like $130.
I know. It's like, why not buy it in a sense?
Let's see. How many PlayStation 2s equals a PlayStation 3? At $500, that's 3.5, 3? At the high-end model, that's 3 or 4.
Yep.
I mean, it's all in the pricing model.
But it's just amazing how it just keeps going. And when Xbox 360 came out, did they stop making the Xbox? Did they totally?
I think they still make them.
Okay, because I didn't know if they were selling, because I was thinking about that in terms of like when Adobe for years sold PageMaker, a truly revolutionary great program, which I use, you've used, and I used like for years and years. And basically around 1996, they stopped developing it completely and started focusing on this Adobe InDesign product. But they kept selling it because people were so into that, and people haven't moved to InDesign yet. And literally, they never stopped selling it. They sold it even though they did not do an update until they – oh, no, 1998 was the last year they did an update. They sold it all the way until like 2003. So for six solid years, they sold a six-year-old computer product. And you'd hear – you'd talk to Adobe engineers, and they would basically say in the background, or Adobe people, they'd say – yeah, we sort of want to get rid of it, move people to InDesign, but we're making $50 million a year on this product. $1 million a week that we put no energy into, no development. And when we do close it down, we're only, hopefully they'll move to our other product, but we're only shooting ourselves in the foot. And I thought, oh, yeah, it was interesting. And I thought, to some extent, Sony's in that same same place. You know, they know that it might help move people to their new product, but how do you turn down $50 million every year?
Oh, sure.
For nothing. You don't have to put any energy into whatsoever. Anyway.
I completely agree. You know, and yet most people still have the, well, they'll probably do okay in the long run because it's Sony and they've got this track record. And
it's amazing how people continually say that.
And I'm maybe it's true. Certainly nobody can tell the future, but I don't know.
You want to know a funny Sony story? I almost brought it with me. I forgot to do it. But I needed to get a media card reader for a computer at work, you know, a little $20 thing. And, you know, I don't know if you've seen them, but they always advertise themselves as a 5-in-1 or a 4-in-1. Yeah. And they list the thing. And I saw one that said it was like 5-in-1 and another 6-in-1 and one there's 7-in-1 and another 4-in-1. And then I saw the Sony one and it advertised itself as 17-in-1. And I looked at the box and I saw on the right hand side, they showed all the little media discs. It's like SD card, uh-huh, you know, all these other ones. Then you look on the left hand side and they had like 7 there. Then on the left hand side, they had like 9 little pictures and it was Sony memory stick with gate attachment, Sony memory stick with, and it listed all these tiny minute variations of the memory stick, and it accounted them as a reader. It was the funniest damn thing I ever saw. So they could advertise it as 17-in-1. It was hilarious.
What a joke. All right, let's see. So there's two big things, and one, there's a bunch of interrelated things now to discuss.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll just list them so that we don't forget. We've got the iPhone,
yep,
Apple TV,
yep,
and then on the Microsoft side, IPTV,
yep,
and to a lesser extent, the Windows Home Server.
Yep.
Maybe starting with the last first. So at CES, Bill Gates announces Windows Home Server.
Yep.
And there's actually very little information about this thing. But the gist is a recognition of storage space. People need a ton of storage space now for their songs, for their movies, for their photos, for everything. And it's getting, and you can't just put it on your computer because your hard drive in your computer just isn't big enough.
Yeah, I've got a big problem with mine here.
And so this addresses the problem, but I don't really know how because I haven't seen any details.
Well, I watched the developers' videos on them, which were, you know, that Channel 9 thing, the in-house Microsoft video network and other stuff.
I don't know if you watch that.
Okay, so I watch a lot of those because they're kind of fun and they're really totally inside kind of things, although they're obviously for public consumption too. And they were going through it, and there was a lot of really interesting things about it, specifically it sounds like kind of obvious in retrospect, but if you put new capacity in your server, it doesn't create it as a separate drive. It just adds your capacity. That's a pretty smart move.
Depending on how it's set up. But yeah, certainly for most regular servers, that's how it is.
To a certain extent, I realized when I was looking at this, I was going, man, if they set this thing up right, what would be really smart is if it could seamlessly work out an arrangement with, as opposed to just adding hard drive space, because it's, you know, broadband, you could pay $2 a month to have 50 gigabytes anywhere, and it seamlessly adds to your thing. It may slow things down a little bit in caching and receiving, but the, but as you get, like, there's been many times when I've been doing huge video files where all of a sudden I go, like, even doing this podcast every week, I always play this damn shuffle of deleting and moving stuff, and it'd be great to have it seamlessly go, I have a virtual, I have unlimited space, because it will automatically go on and off there. The other thing about the Windows Home Server, which was pretty cool, was incredibly fast backups of all of your hard drives every day, very fast, because it's looking online and it's seeing what you've added, and it's building it in a way that is quick and seamless, and it also is looking for duplicate copies, and it's not saving multiple copies of things. So if you have three different computers with Pirates of the Caribbean on it, it's going to maintain one cache copy of it. For me, I'm just looking for a central base for to run kind of my house on, and it seems like this might in fact be the thing to some extent.
Yeah, my thought on this is, what does it cost and how hard is it? Yeah. Because the general public still has trouble using computers, knowing what to do.
Yeah.
Certainly it's a lot, the people are more knowledgeable now than they used to be, but it's still pretty complicated. And setting up a server is hard for non-technical people.
You got the distinct impression they're assuming people are going to be more technical doing this, but you got the distinct impression they're making it as easy as they can.
And clearly, but will it be easy enough?
Yeah.
And again, it's, to buy one, not just the software, but that and the box, how much, $1,000, $2,000?
See, that's what concerns me.
Because servers are expensive.
Well, this is what concerns me, is a server doesn't have to be. A server could be a $150 box because of what it's accomplishing. There's no video card, there's no nothing. It's literally just a processor. It could be very, very simple. The problem is if they do it like they did with Windows Home, where they decided, XP Home Media Edition, where, nope, you can't buy it on its own. You only can buy it if you buy a box and it comes with it. Thus, like, making it very expensive. And it's like, no, I have an extra computer. I know the capabilities. I want to buy the software.
I would imagine that was a restriction placed on it by content like Hollywood or whatever.
It was also
they could control things more.
My understanding, it was more because when Microsoft was very concerned that people were going to put it on computers that didn't have the robust capabilities, and it wouldn't run it. But in this particular case, I would just certainly hope that they don't do something like that, because at that point, I can set up a home server pretty easily on my own. In fact, I kind of have one right now. So I'm not too worried about that. I like a lot of the features of that, but I definitely want to be able to do it myself.
And then there's all these different things about what type of that. Is it using RAID? Is it using RAID 5, RAID 0, RAID 1?
Yeah.
And, then you have to educate people on what that is and what the difference is and what they can expect in terms of the backup and, what does that mean in terms of hard drives? And it's just, it's a big step up for complexity. And can they make it simple enough? And can it be cheap enough?
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's just going to be another forgotten product, honestly. Yeah.
So what are you saying about IPTV?
Not a lot. They announced the capability of the Xbox 360 to serve as a set-top box for IPTV, which is Internet Protocol TV, which is TV signals over the internet without cable or whatever.
So what they're talking about is not what they're currently doing, which is downloading content and playing it, but watching it live streamed using IPTV.
But the thing I think, and they point this out in interviews, the thing people need to understand, it's an end solution, and it doesn't mean anything unless you have a provider.
Yeah.
And there's only a few markets that have the capability, the backbone.
Yeah, and like they point out, you go to Korea and other stuff, IPTV is huge.
Oh, of course.
Because the average person over there is like 50, literally 8 times the bandwidth that we have over here.
So right now, Verizon, especially with their Fios, their fiber solution, they are offering IPTV as part of their own thing, and I assume you need a Verizon box or something.
And only in very specific areas.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Yeah. I mean, it's slowly expanding because it's expensive to run fiber to the door, so to speak. So you're going to need something like that, whether or not it's actually fiber, but you'll need a provider, and Microsoft is not that provider. They are the end box. Yep. All they're doing is saying you don't need a quote-unquote cable box. Yep. You can use your Xbox, and it'll work just great. We're just building in this capability, which you can take advantage of in the future, in the years to come, which, you know, it'll be interesting because I'm really looking forward to, you know, Verizon Fios. I hate Verizon, but I'm loving that fiber.
Yeah.
Especially because their combined package is supposed to be really a good deal.
Yeah.
But so IPTV won't mean anything to you unless you've got a provider in the area.
Yeah.
But it's definitely interesting, and certainly it's another step towards Microsoft being in the living room and sort of dominating that. And a lot of people don't realize that Microsoft does a lot of work. They're creating an IPTV product to work on the back end that then they sell to Verizon or to whoever. And they're selling it in other countries, in Europe and whatnot. And it's, as far as I know, it's working well.
Yeah.
But since it's a behind the scenes product, it's not something consumers are really aware of. You know, and again, people have to be somewhat educated. I was talking to someone about it, and they assumed I was talking about web TV.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, this is someone who works at Microsoft.
Yeah.
And I was talking to them about IPTV, and they thought I was talking about the next version of web TV. And I was like, no.
Web TV?
No. That's different. I mean, some people
is
on
there. Is there a next version of web TV?
I don't think so.
Yeah, I think that's like dead like 5 years
ago. I'm pretty sure there's, you know, it probably got rolled into MSN or some other product, but it's two different things. But even someone that worked at Microsoft, you know, granted, he wasn't working in the IPTV division, so it's not like he had any reason to know that. But it's just interesting
to
know.
And IPTV is essentially a video on demand service. It's not they're sending out a data stream signal like cable where you turn it on when it's on.
I think that's correct. I'm not positive.
So it's essentially a different way of doing video on demand.
That's one of those things I'll read and understand when I read it and then completely forget the details.
Well, I would assume that would make the most sense, but that just like video on demand, you have to have a complex network to be able to kind of handle that because just for the sheer volume of data coming down the pike.
All right. So iPhone and Apple TV.
Mm-hmm.
I'm at work and I'm on Engadget doing their live blogging of the keynote. And then 6 minutes in, it stops reloading for me. So I have to find someone else. I'm doing internet chat with my buddy, Preston, and he lets me know of another site. So we're both, you know, constantly hitting F5, watching this whole thing going through as they're, first they go through Apple TV, and let's talk about that second.
Mm-hmm.
But they go to the iPhone, and we're just like, oh my God, this is incredible. Oh, this is nuts. Oh, wow, this is awesome. And just like, oh my God, I want one right now. Total drooling Pavlovian fanboy Apple response. And then he gets to the end, and he's like, 500 and 600, or was it 4 and 500?
500, 600.
500, 600. I'm like, okay, I'll do it. you know, and then I email you and your response is not for 8 gigabytes. I'm not.
Yeah.
And I had addressed that and mentally gotten over it. And then I saw your email and I'm like, maybe Richard's right.
You know, part of the problem was is I didn't watch the keynote till later.
I just
read the pure details. And so I think to a certain extent, when somebody translated and it was a dispassionate article, said, oh, people are excited, but this is what it was. I was looking at the details and I was going, okay. So a certain respect, I wasn't hearing the excitement. So I was just looking at it from a pure standpoint of where I'm at, what I'm at. So I can imagine it for me, there was a lot great about it, but for me, it's sort of, I don't know, price actually isn't that big of a deal because I consider it an iPod. But I want a hard because I want it to effectively replace the iPod for me to some extent, not be a phone that, oh, happens to have a couple of capabilities. And from that perspective, you know, the input, I'd have to use the input to see how it works because I like the stylus, even though he made fun of styluses.
I don't think he made fun of it. He just said it didn't use one.
Yeah. Well, but by default, Styluses are for horrible keyboards, and styluses are so old school, basically. And maybe he's right. I don't like the little keyboards either. But anyway, my point being is that I looked at it and I'm thinking, you know, the thing I like about my Pocket PC is that it's really flexible. It's a piece of crap, and the software is just horrible, but it's flexible. And then this didn't seem that way, and I'm understanding that it doesn't tie into my, you know, I don't know that it ties into a POP account or not. Maybe it does. If it does, that's okay. It doesn't necessarily tie into my contacts, and it's like, boy, you better figure that out so I can, like, sync it up to my contacts.
It doesn't work with Outlook.
Yeah. See, that's like me. I mean, that's 99% of the PC users.
Well, but it's, you know, if your contacts were through the Apple address book.
But I don't understand it because I know it takes my contacts. I know my current iPod takes my contacts.
From where?
From Outlook. And my current.
I don't know.
I don't know that. See, I think what they're saying is it doesn't integrate necessarily. But every time I sync, it goes and looks at my contacts and pulls any new ones down.
I've never used contacts in Outlook ever.
Yeah, see, I use everything. All my contacts, my email, all that is all Outlook-based. But I don't know. Ultimately, the thing with me with the phone was I was going, there's a lot of really cool stuff on it. But ultimately, I don't want to be syncing with two iPods. This does not replace my iPod. I have 28 gigabytes of stuff in my iPod. And I like watching video, and they're kind of selling this as the capability of having a big video thing, yet the one thing that allows video to be on there is a lot of storage space. And you got to assume it's 4 gigabytes, but at least a gig of that is the operating system and other stuff. So you're basically saying you can put maybe half of Pirates of the Caribbean on here, and then or maybe one movie on there, and then juke it out. And it's I don't want to do that.
Now, they wouldn't do it that. They wouldn't cripple it that badly.
Well, but how do you know how much a movie is? A movie's like 2 to 3 gigabytes. So if you have a 4 gigabyte unit and it has a 1 gigabyte, you know, operating system.
Well, you're assuming that.
Okay, so let's say it's 0% of the operating system. Let's say it's 4 gigabytes. You could not put 2 movies on there. You just couldn't.
Well, that
versus on my current iPod, I have like 15 TV shows just taking up space on there. I've got, you know, my entire music collection and other stuff.
Well, maybe they are. I don't know.
So anyway, so that was my point. And I fully assume that they're going to put a hard disk based one, like around version 3 of it. That's probably the one I'll get. Because that way it'll be cheaper. They won't necessarily be totally tied into singular at that point. So I'm sort of thinking June of 2009 is when I'll be buying my iPhone.
You know, we'll see. It's to me, I haven't seen any of the articles address the storage issue like that. How many movies can you actually fit on the 4 gigabyte model? Although, why in God's name would anyone buy the 4 gigabyte model?
Yeah, so then you're talking about $600, but 8 gigabytes still, it's, I don't know. I mean, that's definitely better. Definitely better, but how many people do you know that are kind of power iPod users that have any that don't fill up much more than 8 gigabytes?
I don't know. Well, mine's not video, so mine's all audio, and I would just rationalize that as, well, you manage your syncing better.
Yeah, but it's
how many videos do you need to have on it on one time?
You don't. It's just the convenience. I don't know.
I know. I'm not saying you
don't.
That's
not a typical Apple solution to say that. That's a Microsoft kind of solution. And the beauty is that you get to manage your syncing better. Well, the Apple solution is not to do that.
And my point is that I'm sure they've thought of that and they've done something. Maybe there's some new codec or compression which shrinks them down even further or something.
Yeah,
we just don't know. But, the podcast I listened to This Week in Media, MacBreak Weekly, very, very, very excited about this, and pointing out a number of different aspects of it, which I wouldn't have thought of. But it's amazing how much all of these people hate their existing phones. And they've got Trios, they've got, you know, just a random assortment, but a lot of them have Trios, and they hate them.
Yeah.
They're like ready to film them, you know, destroying them with a sledgehammer. They hate them that much.
Yeah.
And I started thinking about it. It was like, nobody loves their phone's OS.
Yeah.
It just, I've got a 3-year-old Sony Ericsson candy bar or something or other. I don't even know what the model number is. And I don't hate the operating system, but certainly there's nothing special there. And when you see the pictures and you see the way the iPhone's operating system works, suddenly it's in stark relief how crappy everything else is. And you're just like, wow, that UI, that Apple user interface is so insanely better, insanely great,
yep,
so insanely superior to what I have now that I instantly, that is worth $600 to me.
I look at that and I go, because it's not really a phone. It's much more than that, and that's what makes it great. It's a convergence product, which it's so funny how nobody was really pointing out that this is entirely Microsoft screwing the pooch on this. There's not a single thing in there that Microsoft couldn't have basically done 5 years ago. I had a touchscreen pocket PC, powerful computer, 5 years ago that could have, that just doing what they're doing could have done all of that. All of it.
Well, let's back up for a second. Let's discuss a little more in detail what the iPhone actually does. It's a phone. Mm-hmm. And it's got a beautiful user interface.
Yep.
And it has a number of innovations with, or at least, I don't know, like I heard that the visual voicemail isn't actually, like, someone else was doing it.
Yeah.
But nobody's doing it as good or as high a profile, yeah, where you can just see your voicemails listed almost like an email, and you touch it and then you listen to it. Yeah. And great.
You can do it. You can do it like if you have Vonage. Like, I obviously do it in Vonage. I can, like, if I go online. But there's nothing like what they're doing, which is pretty cool. Cool little feature.
So there's where if you're in the middle of a call and you get another call, it shows up as, you know, here's someone and maybe there's a cute little picture and you can just touch them to add them to your conversation. Suddenly you're doing a 3-way call. You know, and it's much smoother of how you interact with the phone functions. And certainly it's beautiful looking. Then it's also the video iPod, where you turn it on its side and suddenly it's this widescreen, beautiful, wide, gigantic presentation of video that's supposed to work very well. And then it's and then you can, like, do the scroll thing like they did for, the latest iTunes revision, where you had cover flow front, it's not front page, whatever the heck that cover, yep, flip thing was. You could, like, yep, this is the worst podcast etiquette ever. It's that thing, you know, it does this. But as it flipped through your CD cases, it was, yep, beautiful. You know, they can do the same thing for video now, in the TV shows. And, you know, that cover flow capability for the CDs is in there for the audio, and it's beautiful, and it just looks amazing. And then it's also this internet communication device where it's Safari, because basically it's they did an embedded version of OS X.
Yep.
And it's still unclear how robust it is, but they have, so you can view web pages and do apparently a pretty good job of viewing them,
yep,
in Safari, but, like, all the podcasts in the wake of the keynote were stoked about that, because suddenly you can use web tools and design almost any application to run on this thing. Because, yep, very early on they said it's closed. You cannot develop an application strictly for the iPhone. We're not going to let you do it. We're locking it down.
Yeah.
So people are saying, well, that's okay. We can backdoor through Safari and Java and Flash. So they're all assuming that. Well, it came out like a week later that it actually will not run Java and it will not run Flash,
yeah,
on the Safari. And you wonder, well, so many websites incorporate those things. That'll be...
Including the New York Times, which I thought was funny because that was the big example he was using.
Well, was it Java or JavaScript?
Oh, no, I know they use Java. I don't know about JavaScript. I know they use Java, or, well, you know, I'm getting confused.
JavaScript is the thing that does, like, menus.
Yeah.
That's JavaScript. Java is more robust programming interactivity.
Okay. Yep.
A lot of people confuse the two. As far as I know, JavaScript isn't a problem. But suddenly the ability to develop, like, a web app is strongly diminished. Which is too bad, because people were really excited about that. So that's sort of, you know, and then it can sync with, you know, it can do a lot of cool computery type things if you're near Wi-Fi in terms of syncing, looking at your contacts list, and having it be a small computer.
Yeah.
So you're right. As I'm watching this and going through, I am also thinking, you know, it's amazing. Windows Mobile, I bet, can do most of this, if not all of it. And it's been around for a while.
Yeah, and they've just literally let it die on the vine.
Well, they haven't let it die on the vine, but
through incompetence is what I mean.
I disagree with that. It's still a product that they do. It's a growth market for them.
Okay, here's what I mean by that. I am a consumer of that product. I purchased my first Pocket PC, I think, in the year 2000. And I have had, I replaced that one with another Pocket PC about in like 2004 or 2005, and I've had that one. So I've had them for like 7 years now. I like the product, but it has not appreciably changed in any way. It is clunky.
Well, what OS is on your Pocket
Windows
PC?
Mobile 2003, which is the latest version.
No, Windows Mobile 5 is the latest version.
Mobile 5 is what I have on there. Okay. And it is as bad as the very first version I have. What I mean by that is that it, A, is robust. You can develop stuff. It's cool. That's why I like it. I like that I can download a mileage tracker program and games and other stuff. I mean, I like that. It's legitimately, they made it really open end like a computer. The downside to it is I literally, and I kid you not, if I'm using in a given day, this is not an exaggeration. If I use it continually throughout the day, I have to do a soft reset at least 10 times a day. I'm doing nothing wrong, but something causes it to hang, and I got to turn the machine over, use my little stylus to hit that little embedded, deeply soft reset button because something has crashed on it. How, after 7 years, as simple of an operating system as this, could they not create something that doesn't crash 10 times a day? And I get the feeling that the Apple product will not be crashing 10 times a day. and I look at all this, and I look at but all of the basics of what Apple is doing, Microsoft is doing, and had 7 years to develop an interface. I don't understand how they don't go out and hire a bunch of people to say, you know, we're not Apple, but let's create like a little skunk works of people that are sort of independent of other people, and their entire job is to create cool interface. Well, and then we'll merge this on top of our horrible clunky products.
I've seen some of the Mobile 5 interface in a video I saw online, like a couple of years ago, and it seemed like they were doing the same sort of thing. When somebody calls, their picture appears, you can touch it on the screen, and you can do some stuff like that. I don't know, like, I'm not sure to what degree a lot of the things Microsoft wants to do in mobile are hobbled by the carriers, because that's another aspect of this, of Apple going to Singular and saying, you know what? If you want to play ball, here's what you need to do. And Apple was able to dictate a lot of phone features and a lot of things and saying, look, we needed to do this. And I don't care if your network can do that now. If you want to play ball, you need to do it.
Yeah.
Like the visual voicemail thing is only available because Singular modified their network to make it available.
Yeah.
And most of the time, because as people were discussing, is Apple going to do a cell phone? One of the reasons that they wouldn't is that they would have to play by the carrier's rules, Verizon, Singular, T-Mobile, and they're very restrictive about what, you know, we want this feature enabled, we don't want this feature enabled, which is antithetical to how Apple operates. And so people were wondering, how are they going to get around that? And so a lot of people were assuming it would be an open phone that you could use on any of the carriers. Yeah. Got around it by saying, if you want to play with us and have access to the customers we're going to bring, you need to play ball.
Yep.
So it's 2 years exclusive with Singular. It won't even work on a CDMA network, Verizon's network. It just won't work right now. Although I'm sure it wouldn't take a lot of effort technologically for the iPhone to do that. The same way that they were, you know, the same way they had that team working on the OS to work on Intel processors for all those years, just in case.
Yeah.
So there's that. So Microsoft, the way it does business is it plays by the rules. And it says, okay, carriers, if you're going to, you know, hobble our product, okay. You know, okay, Hollywood, if you want us to put all this restrictive DRM so to get people out there, okay, we'll do it. Whereas Apple says, no. We're going to do it our way or no way. And they get away with it.
Yeah.
And so I think there's some of that going on. I don't know how much. At the same time, just to, as I interrupt you, at the same time, I saw a Ballmer, Steve Ballmer comment, kvetching and sort of bitching about it, saying, you know, they haven't done anything innovative here. We've been doing this for years. And I'm like, well, whose fault is it that no one knows about that? It's your fault.
Wow. I was going to say, boy, if he were to say anything like that, I would say, boy, I think it's time for you to retire, because response is not to...
I don't remember his specific response. I remember it was somewhat snarky, and it was like somewhat dismissive, like, well, where's the keyboard?
God.
And my thought was, well, no matter what your response is specifically, it's, you know, well,
practical...
whose fault is it that no one knows that Windows Mobile can do that? Whose fault is it that, you know, Verizon hobbles that particular capability? Maybe it's Verizon's fault, but you could have done, you know, Apple got away with it.
Yeah.
You know, it's talk about.
Well, here's the thing. If they're really smart, they've got a bunch of manufacturers that have been working on Windows Mobile products for a very long time that could pretty easily go, you know what, let's just make kind of an Apple clone. Not necessarily the full thing, but an Apple clone. I've been surfing web. I don't mean it cloning their thing. I'm saying you already have the software. Just tweak it enough that you're not infringing on any patents, but you're just going, okay, make it have a feel to it, make it do something else, and just start marketing as a competitor. Because one of the things about Apple is that they're putting this out there that people don't even actually think there's a competitor. You notice when Apple was talking about its competitors, they were only talking about things like the Trio and other stuff. They never mentioned Windows Mobile kind of things.
Well, a Trio will run Windows Mobile.
Understood. So. But they're not mentioning like your classic pocket PC with a phone in it. And that is in many ways the true competitor for this thing.
But they're saying it's not. They're saying that they're after the high-end market that's 1% of the cell phone market, is not what you're talking about.
I understand, but I'm not saying that. I'm saying that in terms of the functionality, that's the competitor. It's easy to say we're after this other market, but if you just lined up features, most of the things are not saying implementation of the features, but the actual features, their competitor is a pocket PC with a phone in it. You know, the ability to have contacts, the ability to see your voicemail, the ability to see a picture of people, the ability to run applications, the ability to see movies. That's on a pocket PC. It's just poorly implemented.
Well, you're differentiating between a pocket PC and a mobile and Windows Mobile 5.
Well, I'm talking about pocket PCs with Windows Mobile. That's what I'm talking about.
Then I don't understand what you're talking about, because that is the higher end of the market.
Well, but I'm not talking about I'm talking about the classic one with the touch screen, and not the Trios, which are literally
that's in the same arena.
Okay, well, that's the same thing then. You know, and the other thing about it that was interesting, it was kind of funny, a lot of the stuff he says, it's just watching these revival meetings. I honestly, I've decided I'm tired of them, of the Steve Jobs things. This was the one it jumped the shark for me with, and here's a couple reasons why. And I believe there's going to be a backlash. I think this will be the high watermark. But so the main thing is this one here is a high watermark for everybody went crazy. But this is one when literally there wasn't a single thing that when you walked out of that thing, walked out of the keynote, that you could go, great, I can go to my Apple store now and buy.
Yeah, there was. Well, Apple TV, available immediately.
Apple TV, available. Okay, can you buy one right now? I'll give you $1,000 if you can go buy one right now.
I don't believe they're on sale here in Richard's house.
Okay, I'll give you $1,000 if you can go down to the Apple store and get one right now. Give you $1,000. I'll give you $5,000. I'll give you $100 million.
Richard's snotty tone is indicating that apparently it's not available.
There you go.
My understanding was that it was available for purchase immediately.
He would have said it would have been. It is not.
No, I thought it was. Are you sure it's not?
Early February. They're not done. When I sent you the email about my considering on buying one, they're not ready. They're just not ready. So Apple TV, not ready. iPhone, 6 months down the pike.
Well, on the...
I understand why he's announcing it. I understand everything, but to a certain extent, you know, that was part of it to me. It was like every one of these announcements always, this is great and let's run out and be able to buy it. And now for the second time in a row, it's been a major thing that wasn't exactly ready. And I was actually stunned the Apple TV wasn't ready. Again, I want him to deliver something. I'm assuming they're created. It's just a software issue, but I just kind of assume that. Now, the other thing that was about it that I was looking on, it was just, it's gotten to the point where it's become more about promises than actual items. Now he's going to deliver them, but at a certain point, when you're coming to have a keynote about something that's happening in the future, you got to be very careful, because at a certain point, you're going to have people stop just taking everything for granted. They're going to start being snarky about your keynotes. You disagree that people don't want to have something in the here and now.
No, I agree with that. However, I think there's a couple of things going, working against that. And that is Apple's been on the rise for a long time.
Yep.
They have been ascending. They continue to make products people want.
Yep.
And I think people are willing, especially the drooling drones like me,
yep,
where I am willing to wait. I don't care if I can't buy it, usually because I don't have that much disposable income. I can just, I'll take that $1,000 toy I didn't know about yesterday, yep, and suddenly I know about today, and I have to save up and plan and say, okay, I'll eke out a little money here and there, and then finally I can afford it. So to me, the same day availability for that isn't a big deal, and I think, not that people are necessarily like that, but I think that they're so into Apple, they are willing to wait. And I think the other thing working against same-day availability, and the earlier you can announce something, the fewer leaks there are about it. And as you actually start manufacturing a product, and you've got, vendors in Thailand, or not Thailand, Taiwan, that's a funny image. As you actually start making the product, leaks are going to happen. Apple and Jobs hate leaks, I think, more than anything.
Yep.
More than anything. And so I think some of this earlier announcement is, to some degree, to forestall that. And I think probably more and more we'll see that for new products like that. If it's revisions for, the PowerBook or the computer, that's not as big a deal. But, I sort of see that going forward. And it's too bad that Apple TV wasn't ready immediately. On the other hand, I'm fine with them getting it right. It's too bad that they couldn't plan ahead and get it right by their announced conference date, but I'm fine with the fact they didn't rush something crappy in to meet that arbitrary date.
No, I am too. I'm just saying that it was like, where are the products I can run out and buy now? I get used to that. I like that, and to a certain extent, I don't get, if that is a trend, that's a trend I don't like.
Okay.
Didn't like the fact that there was no Macintosh mention. The one mention of the Macintosh was they took the words computer out of Apple. It's like, wow. That was a very calculated point, but it was just a little weird to have it be so anti-computer. It was totally focused on their other products.
And certainly many people have commented on that, certainly in the podcasts I listen to. And the thinking seems to be that, if they had just revved something like, look, this is the 8 processor Mac Tower, it would have gotten drowned out. Or anything they would have done to the computers, short of a complete, new glowing enclosure, would have gotten drowned out. And so if they've got something new,
people that wanted to hear that, they would have been appeased.
Well, they've done their own product announcements independent of Macworld in the past.
Yep.
This Macworld was more about generating consumer interest and trying to get someone who wasn't necessarily an Apple fan before interested in this iPhone and saying, that's cool, I want that. And so, they went for maximum exposure, which is all iPhone, all Macworld, yep, which did that. They achieved it, and whether or not it will work in terms of consumers down the road remains to be seen. But if they had, if they had done a bunch of computer stuff, it would have detracted from their on-messageness.
Yeah.
So and people are saying that their computer stuff will come out in the next month or two, whatever they have to say, and it will be separate, and there it is. I'm kind of rambling. I lost my train of thought. I don't know.
I thought it was interesting. He said, this is it's the market. It's an enormous market. There is, and he says, what did he say, a 100 million cell phones or a billion or whatever it was as cell phones. And if we just got 1% of it, that is our goal for 2007, 1% of the market. And I loved how he managed in his little graphic to lump the free $20 cell phone you get along with his $500 cell phone. Because really, his market is the high-end cell phone. And that market is much smaller than the other one.
Well,
and
no, he's...
When he was saying cell phone market, he was talking about all of them.
Yes, I agree.
And he's saying, I want 1% of that. And I'm thinking, and I totally think he probably will. Knowing him, he'll sell 10 million iPod phones or iPhones.
Well, because it's the people that are dealing with the Trios and the Pocket PCs and that are pissed off that they don't work.
No, I agree, but that's not the 100 million, a billion people or what, a billion phone. What is 10% of, what was his original figure of the market?
I don't know.
It's 100 million or something like that. Anyway, that's not the should have been based around his competition, which is not the $20 Nokia.
I disagree.
Okay, so in other words, in 1 year, because he was saying, I want 1% of the market. Well, the Trios and the all those phones, that is his direct competition, right? That's only 3% of the whole global market. So in other words, he's saying,
where'd you get that number from?
It was like some website they were talking about. They're adding up all the high-end feature phones and then versing it through all of the other regular phones that don't have those operating systems. And that high-end market is like 3 to 5% of the entire global market that he's talking about. So what he's saying is basically, I'm going to get 20 to 33% of that market as opposed to 1% of the global market. That's a different thing to say. And I'm saying he might be able to do it, It seems a little bit different
when you put it in those terms. You would have preferred to hear it in those terms. I accept that. I'm still fine with the terms he used.
No, I'm just, my point for saying that is that Jobs is a master of saying things and then having people go, yes, thank you for basically shining me on. And I understand you're shining me on, and that's what I want to hear. And I'm doing this, and I'm going, but it is a shine on. It's a way to make his challenge seems smaller, and then people kind of recognize that you and you're comfortable with that. And I'm just saying, but let's not totally thank the guy for shining us on about his challenge. It's an enormous challenge to take away a huge percentage of market share of your competitors. It's like saying, I'm going to go into the restaurant business. And restaurants take, or, you know, food. I'm going to go into the food business, and that takes up some amount. I'm just needing 1 millimeter of 1% of that business versus saying, I'm going to go into the fast food business and double Microsoft or McDonald's share, whatever. It's like, yeah, you're all talking about food, but one is a different challenge than the other.
I understand.
Okay. So I just, the thing that made me, as a person who loves Apple and loves Steve Jobs, watching this keynote was to me, it felt like, wow, it just seemed a little too rapturous. It just seemed the responses were so overboard that I get the feeling, A, there's going to be a backlash. And internally with me, I'm like, man, there was nothing he could say that people weren't even questioning or looking at.
Well, see, I don't think there's going to be a backlash. I think people were excited because it exceeded their expectations. There's been rumors about the iPhone forever, and people are guessing, here's what it's going to do, here's what it's going to do, maybe it'll do this, maybe it'll do that. And I think when he finally displayed what it could do, people were surprised that it could do as much as that. I think people were expecting, maybe it'll do one great thing, and then we'll have to compromise, and we weren't expecting this, and I think that's why.
Yeah.
So we'll see. And then the other interesting, I don't know if it's that interesting, the whole thing about the name, everyone was assuming that it wouldn't be called iPhone because Cisco has the copyright or the trademark on that name. And then he comes out and calls it an iPhone. And then there's a couple stories later in the day about, oh, we're dealing with Cisco and we expect to have an agreement signed today, the day of the keynote, that lets us use it.
Which stunned me.
And then later that week, maybe even the next day, Cisco is suing Apple.
Apparently, Cisco technically filed the papers within an hour of the keynote.
And then there's all this back and forth about, well, does Cisco have the trademark? Did they when they bought it, did they appropriately use it within 6 years? They slapped a sticker on something. They really didn't use it. Their products aren't really...
There's three other products known as the iPhone by other different organizations.
Their thing is a...
It's an internet-based voice-over-air protocol.
It's a VoIP phone. Ours is a cell phone. You know, it's not similar enough. Their lawsuit is silly. And I
actually, after seeing all that, I started to change my tune a little bit. But initially, I was stunned they would make the announcement without having signed some deal with Cisco.
I was as well.
And in retrospect, I'm starting to see why. They're starting to think... Probably ultimately, you know, we'll call it whatever the hell we want. We don't really have a product, so they can't really sue us yet. I mean, they can't really get much in damages, but I started to realize they felt they had a pretty strong case.
Yeah, and we'll see. My thought was, and if they win, then that negates what I'm going to say, but why go to all the trouble? Why not just call it something else?
Yeah.
I understand, you know, iPhone, great. You know, it's like, let's put an I in front of whatever.
Well, I'll tell you, the one thing about that, the iPhone is, for a variety of reasons, in people's brains, it differentiates it. The iPod, you have MP3 players, you have music players, and you have an iPod. And an iPod is just, in people's brains, different. Now, if you lined up the functions... plays MP3 files, plays... It's all the same. But in people's brains...
Not necessarily. Well, especially the navigation is much improved over quite a few competitors.
Okay, I'm not disagreeing that. I'm just saying that ultimately the end result is effectively the same. It's a machine that allows you to store and play an enormous amount of music. That's effectively what it is. And I agree. I'm not disparaging the iPod. I love the iPod. But I'm just saying that ultimately... what you're doing is you're taking music, putting it in a machine so you can play it portably. That's basically what you're talking about. Again, I love the way it's implemented in the iPod. Well, with the iPhone is what they're saying is the name, if you call it an Apple phone, it sounds like the Sony Ericsson phone, or it sounds like the Nokia phone. You call it the iPhone, and I think they're just saying, it subtly is just saying, this is different. It's got all that cool navigation stuff and probably other stuff that an iPod does, so they want to link it to that same intangible feeling people have about that.
I understand it's a branding exercise.
Well, not just branding, but it is. It's very detailed branding in a way that isn't, it's not to connect them to a particular brand, but to connect them to a particular thought process kind of.
I completely understand that. I just would have thought they could have come up with something, some other name that would have been almost as good that wouldn't have required them to engage their lawyers.
I just would have thought he would have said, we're calling it iPhone, like he did with the Apple T or the ITV when he first did that. I would have thought he would have done that at least just to keep Cisco from having a conniption fit, but he chose not to. He said, it's called the iPhone. Although a lot of people pointed out that nowhere on the mock-up units was iPhone on there or whatever. Clearly, they were making this decision at the last second, and they had held out that maybe we won't call it this at the, you know. But anyway.
All right, last thing, Apple TV.
The unreleased Apple TV.
Yes, Richard. I think it's great. This is a product, streams content like downloaded iTunes TV shows or whatever to your TV.
Yep.
You don't need to put a cable between your laptop or your computer or your TV. It's done wirelessly. You can do a cable if you want, but this is a very painless integration of getting media off of your computer and onto your TV. It's got a 40 gigabyte hard drive to both store things locally. Well, I guess that's primarily what its purpose is. It's got 802.11n networking, mm-hmm. like pre-draft, which is going to be super fast. And the ability to link to like four different computers in your house. So this is all very cool. The thing about it, which I didn't know, is apparently this will not work as a hub, as an internet access hub.
Yeah.
And I thought it would. So now I need to get to use this thing wirelessly. I need to double it up with a new AirPort Extreme hub, which kind of pisses me off.
Yeah.
Because I thought this was going to function as an AirPort Extreme hub and double up on the capability, and apparently that's not the case. I'm not positive, but I'm pretty sure, because as you look at the Apple website and the product description, it says paired up with the Apple, you know, Apple Airport Extreme Hub, and I'm thinking, well, why would you need to do that if it already did it? Clearly, it doesn't do it.
Yeah. I started to look at it, and I keep vacillating back and forth. I've been also looking at the new Netgear one because, you know, I like it, but it's iTunes. It's a front end to iTunes, and I'm not totally beholden to iTunes.
It's a front end to Front Row.
Yeah, to Front Row.
Which then yeah. front ends.
Yeah, in other words, it's looking for iTunes type content, and I'm not totally wedded to that.
Well, can you play? If you download a QuickTime file, or
you could probably do that, but I'm talking about Windows media files. I'm talking about my videos. I'm talking about other stuff. You can't necessarily do a lot of that stuff.
Are you? I haven't looked into that at all.
That's my understanding. Is you absolutely can. It doesn't take WMV files. It doesn't take DivX files. It doesn't take some other ones. So I've been looking at like this Netgear one, which has apparently a really cool user interface front end and can take all of that without any of those restrictions. And I think also iTunes kind of files that you can just play them, you know, as long as your iTunes is downloading them, it'll recognize them and play them. And if it, except for the content protected ones, which I would understand. So I'm looking at that one maybe as the one I want to look at, because it just seems more robust.
I agree. Although you could probably just wait a month and then some cracker.
Well, they do.
Some hacker releases a program that lets you do WMVs over.
Yeah, and I know there's like for the Xbox one, some guys release something where it literally re-encodes them on the fly into the system that Xbox wants to do them. So if you could watch them through, but it's like, well, I don't know. The Netgear one looked pretty good.
My buddy's been able to get torrents off the web to work over his 360.
Yeah.
So
yeah, but I know
that's a separate thing.
Yeah. But anyway, so I don't know. I vacillate back and forth. And plus I'm also like trying to buy a big fence. So I don't know what money I have for any of this stuff.
Yeah. I'm thinking about it. I'm not at this point. I don't need it. I'm doing just fine without it. But as soon as I start with the digital files, and you're right, I wasn't aware that maybe it couldn't play WMVs. I just assumed it somehow could. I'll have to look into that and see what the options are.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm still looking for it. It's exciting. I like a lot about it. I was actually honestly surprised. For some reason, I had it in my head. They talked about how directly it was connected to your computer that I thought, oh, my God, it's just a dumb box. It's a box that takes streamed content. And I was thinking, well, that, I guess if it's streaming fast enough, I guess that's okay. But all the processing's done on my computer. And now I'm realizing, no. It's basically like a really large video iPod without a screen. It basically, you put the content on the thing, but it's doing the processing there and sending it to your TV screen. And I thought, okay, that's cool. As long as it's doing that, it's doing a little processing on your computer, but it's not necessarily a dumb box. It's got an actual hard drive in there, which is cool. And that's why I feel better now when he made the big point. There's no more power brick. And now I'm realizing, at the time I was going, yeah, well, of course there's no power brick. There's nothing there to have a power brick for. It's some processing going on there. So it's cool that they've managed to, you know, get rid of the brick.
Excuse me. Yeah, it's, you know, like I said, at this point I don't need it, but I could certainly use it. And then thinking, well, I can't do this thing without getting the Airport Extreme whatever, because I want it to be wireless. I don't want to be dragging an Ethernet cable across my living room any more than I already have. And clearly, you need the N speed, because right now, I'm running a D-Link wireless router, which is, I think, running B speed.
Yep.
Because I have a PowerBook G4. It's not even Airport Extreme. It's just Airport.
Yep.
Because it's... They changed the card. They changed how the card works, and the new one doesn't even fit in my PowerBook. Mm. So I'm thinking, okay, in order to use Apple TV, which is $300, I need the Airport Extreme base station, $180, and on top of that, I need a new laptop.
Yeah.
What I want, I think with the Apple Care plan, which is like $350, I think it ended up being $3,000.
Holy crap, dude!
For the new laptop, I think I got a slightly bigger hard drive. Like you go to the Apple store, you just spec it all out and you see what it would cost.
Yep.
You get that. You get Apple Care, because I'm a big believer in the extended Apple warranties. There's no other warranties I would buy, but I would buy Apple Care. Yeah, and so laptop and those two things, $3,000. And I'm like, you know what? That's a lot of money.
That sure is.
Maybe I'll just use my good old trusty G4 PowerBook for a little while longer.
Yeah, I know. I will. I've been looking, eyeballing Vista and everything else, and I'm not, and I clearly won't be getting new computers probably for about a year, which is probably good anyway because everything just gets cheaper. But
yeah, and you know, certainly with Apple, you know, the longer you wait, you can get the next OS pre-installed, and that's always better than trying to install it yourself. Even though they've been, the last couple times I've done an OS install or OS upgrade on my laptop, it's been pretty painless.
Yeah.
Which has been nice.
Well, I've reinstalled XP many, many, many times because I love doing that. But for me, I mean, if I could afford it, if their laptops were friggin' reasonable, I would get an Apple laptop because I could run, you know, Windows on it. But they're not reasonable in the way that their computers are. So the iMacs are. So I'm sort of vacillating. I mean, next year I want to buy a computer, but I'm not going to be spending $3,000 on a laptop.
Well, no, that's the 15-inch MacBook Pro.
Yeah, but that I 15-inch is small for me. I haven't had a 15-inch laptop in 7 years. So I mean, my laptop is definitely my computer that I use for everything.
That Dell was how big was that?
My computer,
the black one
at Seattle. I don't know about that one. That was 15.4 is the biggest one they had.
No, but, I'm talking about the one you put the AC/DC JBKG sticker on.
Yeah, that was a 15.4 inch one. That was the biggest one they sold at the time.
Okay, well you had that up till
2001. In 2000 and when I started working at Seattle Audubon, I had a 17-inch laptop, and I've had a 17.2-inch one for the past couple of years. I can't go back. Let's put it that way.
Sad.
I mean, I just no. You're saying it's sad. I use, I do a lot of video editing. I do a lot of other kinds of editing, and I need an enormous screen. I mean, just need it.
Well. And I agree.
Yeah, I'm just telling you, I need it. I'm not saying it's good or bad. I'm just telling you, I need it. And it, for Apple, they make you suffer for that need versus if you're getting an XP, if you're getting a Windows machine, there's so much competition around there. You can get one of those relatively inexpensively.
See, if I were doing video editing and I didn't need to be a road warrior about it and I had a laptop, I would get just like an external display, like that Dell 24-inch that everyone loves.
Yeah.
I would just get that and use that for my editing off of the laptop.
I agree. I'm purely functioning on my lifestyle. I work 70, 80 hours a week often, typically, and I tend to do things, as you know, weird times of the day, whenever, however I can do them. So I can't really, unlike...
Well, whenever being usually last minute.
But you say last minute, it's like I'm accomplishing a lot of stuff, so I'm just getting it done.
I'm not saying it doesn't work.
So it
for
might
you.
Be
That's
it might be me. Workflow. It might be me going to my dad's house because he wants to watch wrestling, so I take my laptop over there to do it. It might be at work. It might be on you know somebody else's driving on the way home. I just need to have maximum flexibility, and I need a large screen. So there's no way I'd pay $3,000 for an.
Well, I don't
Apple
know what
machine.
The 17-inch MacBook Pro goes for. Huh? Because that's not anything. I don't need that. I'm fine with the 15, so I've never spec'd it out.
Yeah, I definitely, absolutely need a 17-inch. I could not handle it otherwise. Right. And I would hope that, you know, by the time I could afford it, they might be reasonable. But I'm kind of assuming they won't. And it won't be my money anyway. It'd be a non-profit's money, and I need to maximize that expense. I can't justify spending extra money when it's non-profit money. So.
All right. I think we're done.
We are.
You guys rock at mustardayonnaise.com. That's how you contact us to have us discuss things that are relevant.
And next week we can talk about. I have purchased my 1,000th DVD, and we can talk about it next week.
We need to do our special commemorative, incredibly insane DVD collection podcast.
Increasingly irrelevant DVD.
Increasing, which I'm sure will be discussed.
Okay.
All right. Bye.